Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. On today's show, we'll talk about the Minnesota National Guard's deployment of the 148th Fighter Wing from Duluth and learn about the new State Veterans Cemetery in southern Minnesota. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
More than 70 years ago, in April of 1942, 64 Minnesota soldiers were subjected to unspeakable suffering during what is now known as the Bataan Death March. 75,000 Allied service members, imprisoned and weak by months of starvation and disease, were forced to undergo the five-day march. Japanese forces would kill those who were unable to continue, and thousands were mistreated and died. Of the 64 original Minnesota soldiers called up from the Brainerd and Park Rapids-based Company A, 194th Tank Battalion, only 32 survived to return home after the war. These heroic Minnesota Guardsmen endured some of the worst conditions imaginable during their captivity and showed the strength and resilience to survive. Today I pay tribute to all the men who endured the Bataan Death March. Their sacrifice paved the way for today's Minnesota National Guard.
Thank you, General Nash. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now is Colonel John Safstrom, who is the wing commander of the 148th Fighter Wing of the Minnesota Air National Guard in Duluth, Minnesota. The 148th Fighter Wing flies the Block 50 F-16CM, the newest F-16 in the United States Air Force fleet, and is one of only two Air National Guard wings tasked to provide suppression of enemy air defense support for our nation. Colonel Safstrom, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks, Tom. It's good to be back with you.
Sir, I know you were on the show in February, and we learned a lot about the 148th, but some of our listeners might not have heard that. Can you tell us, how long have you been in the military?
Well, Tom, I've been in the military, I think, going on 27, almost 28 years now. I joined back in the late 80s, right out of college, and I actually entered through the United States Navy, did a tour active duty Navy, and then got out and joined the Guard in the late 90s, and I've been here ever since.
And I think we talked about that last time, sir. It's probably a lot easier to land an F-16 up in Duluth than it is to land a Navy jet on an aircraft carrier like the Kitty Hawk.
Well, it usually is, but, boy, we're having some fantastic spring weather up here in Duluth with snow and fog and sleet, and times like this, it can be challenging, too. But in general, yeah, it's a little bit easier landing on the runway than an aircraft carrier.
And, sir, you joined, you got out of the Navy one day, and the next day you joined the 148th Fighter Wing back in 1998?
That is correct, Tom. Good memory. I did just that. It's a wonderful story about how our National Guard works and our ability to translate that active duty time into continued service for our state and country. And so it was a great opportunity to just to walk off of active duty and come back to my hometown, home state, and join the National Guard here.
And you're a native of Duluth, and I understand you've got thousands of flying hours logged, sir.
Well, I sure do. It's obviously it's been my profession over the years in the military and on the civilian side. So I sure do. It's been a wonderful career, and especially to have an opportunity to, like I said, be in our home state here in Minnesota and continue to do that type of flying.
And, Colonel, you're now the commander of the 148th Fighter Wing, part of the Minnesota National Guard in Duluth. Can you tell us a little bit about how many airmen you have up there and aircraft and the type of things that you do in both your federal and state missions?
Sure can, Tom. We have 22 aircraft here at the 148th Fighter Wing. As you mentioned earlier, the Block 50 F-16 performing the SEED mission. Our wing is comprised of about 1,000 men and women, 1,000 airmen, and they have obviously specialties all across the spectrum. So we have folks that fix the jets. We have folks that maintain different parts of the aircraft, and then all of the support functions that go along that with civil engineering squadron, logistics. I obviously can't name all of them right now, but security, pretty much anything that's associated with flying, fixing, and performing our mission, we have folks that are trained to do that. So about 1,000 people, about 400 of them full-time, 22 aircraft, and our state mission, obviously those support functions like civil engineering, security, medical teams, things like that, response forces. We can perform on our civil side, our state side, and then federally, obviously, we would use our F-16s for our nation's defense if called upon.
We're talking to Colonel John Safstrom, the commander of the 148th Fighter Wing of the Minnesota National Guard and Duluth, Minnesota, on Minnesota Military Radio. And Colonel, I know that as you're stationed there at the airport at Duluth, or right on adjacent land, but do your airmen take care of the firefighting up there for that airport?
They sure do, Tom. We have a unique relationship with the Duluth Airport Authority and exchange. We are a tenant. The Air National Guard base is part of the Duluth Airport Authority and the land here. And so as part of the use agreement to utilize the airfield and the runways, we also provide services in exchange. And one of those services is the crash fire rescue for the entire airport. So our airmen, in addition to state members, firefighters also, not just military members, but a combination of both state and the military firefighters perform that crash fire rescue for the airport.
And sir, I understand the Duluth International Airport has a 10,000-foot runway. Is that, I don't know, how far does it take to stop an F-16?
A lot less than that, Tom. We can take off in a couple thousand feet, and depending on what kind of weather we're having, we can land in a lot shorter than that. However, it's always nice when you have snow and ice to have a lot longer runway to stop on. That being said, really the length of the runway is a holdover from the Cold War days when they needed a long runway for some of the strategic bombers that used to fly in and out of here.
So a few thousand extra feet is just a cushion.
It never hurts. It's always nice to have.
And, Colonel, I understand you also have a bomb disposal unit up there.
We certainly do. We have a explosive ordnance, or EOD, as most folks would know it. And those folks train every day for their Air Force mission, their federal mission, but then they're utilized through our Adjutant General when called upon for a state mission if need be.
Now, Colonel, the use of the F-16s is primarily on your federal mission, and as I read from your website earlier, you're one of only two Air National Guard wings tasked to provide suppression of enemy air defense support for our nation. Can you explain that to us a little bit?
Sure, Tom. That is correct. An F-16 is generally, obviously, a fighter where we can do air-to-air and air-to-ground missions. In other words, defend against other aircraft and then defend against ground threats. Some of our missions, like Afghanistan, we support our Army brothers and sisters over there in their ground, in a ground battle. But this specific mission, SEED, Suppression of Enemy Air Defense, that acronym, is really for going into a threat, one of our enemy countries, and targeting their radars, their early warning systems, and their surface-to-air missile threats. And what we do is we go in and we call it the Wild Weasel Mission, because it's like a weasel and a snake. We go in there and try to show ourselves and make ourselves a target, make ourselves a higher priority, and then strike those threats down before our some of the other fighters can come into the airspace.
Sir, how fast are your F-16s?
Well, that depends on how much gas you want to burn, Tom. They are very fast. They can go about twice the speed of sound, which is about 1,200 miles an hour. But boy, if we do that, we're going through a lot of fuel very rapidly. So we rarely go through, especially in training, go through the speed of sound, and we usually keep it pretty slow.
So that means if you had to get from Duluth to Minneapolis, you could probably do that pretty quick.
We could. If we needed to respond, especially after 9/11, we were on call to do something like that. We could get to Minneapolis in less than 10 to 15 minutes if we needed to.
Sir, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I'd like to talk about the recent announcement of a deployment of a number of your airmen from the 148th Fighter Wing. We're speaking to Colonel John Safstrom, the commander of the 148th Fighter Wing of the Minnesota National Guard. On Minnesota Military Radio, please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been talking with Colonel John Safstrom, who is the wing commander of the 148th Fighter Wing, Minnesota Air National Guard out of Duluth, Minnesota. And Colonel, before we went to the break, I alluded to the fact that you recently announced that some of your airmen were going to go on a deployment, actually to South Korea.
That's correct, Tom. We have approximately 12 F-16s and 300 of our airmen going to South Korea here in the coming week.
And, sir, I think the last time you were on the show, we talked a little bit about the lines are getting a little maybe fuzzy or maybe more clear, but when we talk about the Air Force, active duty, guard, and reserve, they're all working together more and more than they have in the recent past.
That's entirely correct, Tom. We are more and more the guard and reserve is being utilized as an operational force. We, in the past, the distant past, I would say much earlier than the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan, we were more of a reserve force to be called upon when needed, only when the active duty ran out of people and time. Now we are being utilized as part of a total force structure where planning doesn't occur without the thought of the Guard and the Reserve and how they're going to fit into that plan, and this is a prime example of that.
Sir, I was reading a little more about the 148th Fighter Wing, and it seems that it's been quite an award-winning unit, including in 2009 you were presented with the Distinguished Raytheon Trophy for the best fighter unit in the United States Air Force. And I'm guessing that since you're doing so well and you're training so well and you were the best unit in the Air Force, that means that you get picked for some things like this deployment.
Well, Tom, I think, I'd like to say that was part of the plan. I know that, it's not just a single event that defines a unit. It's long-term success. And our motto here at the 148th Fighter Wing is Legacy of Excellence. We like to let people know when they join that they're joining a great team and has a great tradition and a great legacy of excellence. So I think all those awards and performance recognition that we get has been obviously because of the people that we have here and the members of the 148th Fighter Wing. And over time, that really contributes to a lot of additional roles and responsibilities for our wing. And the Block 50 F-16 was part of that, I think, and it certainly helps to have that kind of experience and that kind of record. And then certainly once you receive those kind of aircraft and the missions they can perform, you're going to be asked to do more of those kind of deployments.
Well, it's kind of a good job and get to work.
That's exactly it. If you're to whom much is given, much is requested.
Sir, no, I understand from the press release it says that 300 airmen and 12 F-16 aircraft will head to Osan Air Base, which is about 40 miles south of Seoul. And a little further on, it says there'll be about 50 to 100 people deploying at a time. Are you rotating some airmen through this deployment, which is going to be about 4 months?
No, Tom. Just because getting 300 people, we're not rotating. It's just 50 to 100 people at a time, just to because we don't have any singular way to get that many people over there at once. So essentially, we have over a period of 5 or 6 days, we'll load up all the equipment into those big C-5 and C-17 transports, and some people will go with some of the equipment. Some of the folks that we need, what we call the advance party, will go ahead and prepare, get things set up to receive what we call the main body. And that'll be the main group of folks. Approximately 150 of those folks will go. And then the last piece of the puzzle will be the F-16s will take off, and they'll fly a long mission over to South Korea with tanker support. And so deploying them at a time just means that we're going to get people out of here on cargo transports, commercial flights, things like that.
And, sir, it says 300 airmen, so I'm assuming that you're taking along everything from pilots to mechanics to cooks to medical personnel.
You are correct. Maybe not every specialty that we have here on base, but pretty close to all of them. We're actually going to join a fighter wing over in Korea right now, one of the U.S. Pacific Air Force's fighter wings in Osan. And our folks will essentially show up there as a squadron, a package of aircraft and people, and they'll essentially add on to or blend in with that that fighter wing over in Korea right now. So, yes, we need specialties across the spectrum to help with the support of the equipment and the people.
Now, sir, is this a new mission, or is this one of those missions where you follow up after another guard unit or another reserve unit has been there?
That they have not. That is a great question. It's not really a new mission. It's what's called a theater security package, and a theater security package is just like I said, about 300 people and the aircraft that go with it, and the combatant commander. So the Pacific combatant commander has asked that additional forces are brought into the region for stability and security, and so we're not really obviously going to fight any particular battle, but we're there to augment current forces and to provide stability. And so other forces, other guard units have been over there in the past. We have never deployed to South Korea, but anywhere in the Pacific theater they could have put us. We just happened to be deployed to Osan, South Korea this time.
We're speaking with Colonel John Safstrom, who's the wing commander of the 148th Fighter Wing of the Minnesota National Guard from Duluth, Minnesota, on Minnesota Military Radio. And, Colonel, you're sending roughly half of your aircraft over there and 300 of your airmen, and that means that you're going to have quite a few less aircraft up there. And what's everybody else going to be doing while the deployed airmen are out?
Well, it's amazing, Tom. We always find things we need to keep doing here at the 148th. So those folks that are going are part of a response package, like I said, the theater security package, but we still have requirements here in our state and federal mission that we could be called upon to do. So really everybody that's here just stays back and does their normal training. We still, like you mentioned, have aircraft here. We'll still be flying on a daily basis, and we'll still have the folks that support that part of the mission and everything else that we do here at the 148th. And like you mentioned earlier, our state mission, if we're called upon to do that, we'll have those folks and the specialties that that can help. Just not as many as we did before.
Sir, logistically, to move 300 airmen and 12 F-16 aircraft all the way to Osan, South Korea, that must be quite a job to plan for.
It is. It's we have our logistics readiness squadron, the load planners and logisticians, that is their prime job. So this is the time where they shine. And we had quite a bit of packing up to do and a lot of equipment that was staged out on our ramp and staged in our parking lots ready to go. And we are currently in the process of loading that up and getting that onto, like I said, C-5. So well, it's going to take a period of about a week to load up all those different aircraft. And like I said, the jets will be kind of the last piece of the puzzle. We'll fly those out of here in the near future, and that should be it.
Colonel, I know it's a big job to move all those airmen and those aircraft over there, but it also affects 300 families up in Duluth. I'm sure you're providing some extra support and for all those families as well.
We sure are, Tom. That is something that has developed over time, that we've learned that the support network that we need to provide for families is just the right thing to do, obviously, and we've gotten much, much better at it in my time in the military. And so we have the Yellow Ribbon events where we get families together and try to explain exactly what's going to be happening as best we can and the timelines for things. We let them know what kind of resources they're going to be. We give them points of contact and make sure that they know who the people to call are if they need anything. And, you know, we consider ourselves a big family up here at the 148th, and so we just make sure that we're looking out for everybody and that nobody's left behind.
Colonel, one last question. Are your airmen pretty excited about this deployment?
They really are, Tom. You know, we have a lot of first-time deployers, a lot of young airmen that are going for the first time. And to a person, a lot of them have said, you know, this is why I joined the Guard. It's the Guard has fantastic benefits. You know, if you're a young person joining to go to help with schooling, to learn a trade, learn a skill that you can apply to your to the civilian world if you choose to do that. But for the most part, they all say, you know, we join to deploy and to go other places in the world and support our country. So it's an exciting time for them. It's what we train to do. It's what we're training every day, frankly, to do. So to be able to go and implement it somewhere else in the world is a wonderful opportunity.
Colonel, we send our best to all your airmen that are going to be deployed, and we hope to have a successful and safe mission. And hopefully you can check in with us again and give us an update on how that's going.
That sounds like a great plan, Tom. I really appreciate the thought and that you are thinking about us while we're deployed. We certainly will be for all those folks that are going. So thanks.
Colonel, thanks for joining us today.
Okay, thank you, Tom. Take care.
That was Colonel John Safstrom, the wing commander of the 148th Fighter Wing, Minnesota Air National Guard from Duluth, Minnesota, on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. When we come back, we're going to learn about the new state veteran cemetery in southern Minnesota. This is Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. Today's Yellow Ribbon Company Spotlight is Best Buy. Best Buy has a long history of supporting our nation's military. In addition to sharing their best practices for veteran recruiting and other companies, they provide volunteer mentors to prepare job-seeking veterans for the hiring process. Each year, their employees fill thousands of care packages with Best Buy products that are the most popular packages received overseas. Best Buy has been a Yellow Ribbon Company since November of 2011 and is honored and proud to be making a difference to service members, veterans, and their families.
You're listening to the Minnesota Military Radio Network. Stay tuned for more and follow us at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.
Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In this segment, we're going to learn about the new State Veterans Cemetery in southern Minnesota. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Shelato.
153 years ago, ordinary men from Minnesota made an extraordinary sacrifice. At the start of the Civil War, Minnesota was the first state to offer volunteers for the Union Army. Only 3 years after achieving statehood, over 24,000 Minnesotans answered the call to service April 12, 1861. These brave Minnesotans oftentimes found themselves on the front lines or the last to leave the battlefield. Minnesotans played a pivotal role, and their service will never be forgotten. The Civil War changed Minnesota in many ways. After the war was over, many soldiers from other states were drawn here because of the Minnesotans they had met and the stories they had heard. The Civil War deeply shaped the state of Minnesota, and the 1st Minnesota Volunteer Infantry Regiment holds a special place in the history of our state.
Thank you, Commissioner Shelato. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now is the Minnesota State Veterans Cemetery Director, Dave Swantek. Dave, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Hi, Tom. Thank you. It's good to be back.
Dave, we just heard the boss, your boss, Commissioner Shelato, talking about 153 years of service from the Civil War right up through World War I, World War II, Korea, Vietnam, First Gulf War, Iraq, Afghanistan. Seems Minnesota's had a lot of service members and a lot of veterans.
Quite a history, isn't it? Yeah, it's, you know, the Civil War, that era is kind of special for me and what I do, and that started the National Cemetery Administration under President Lincoln. And, you know, the cemeteries that we run and operate today are a continuation of that promise that we'll provide those special burial spaces for our veterans.
And, of course, I think we talked about this the last time you were on the show. Most people think about Fort Snelling, but that's a national cemetery out by the airport.
Yeah, that's correct. They're kind of our big brother, I guess.
Yeah, but you're kind of showing them up because you built one up in Little Falls. It looks pretty darn nice.
Well, we're trying our best. I think we're doing a good job and get a lot of great compliments and positive feedback from the veterans and families that visit us.
Now, you're a native of the state of Wyoming, and you started your career back there in about 1992?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
At the Oregon Trail State Veterans Ceremony out in Casper, Wyoming.
That's correct. Home state of Wyoming, and nice little cemetery out there. It was a great place to kind of learn about this job and what it means, and continued it on for now 20 plus years.
And what year did you come to Minnesota?
July of 96.
And there wasn't any state, were there any state cemeteries there here then?
There were. I actually moved here to take the job in Little Falls in that the summer of 96. And it certainly isn't or wasn't what it is today. We've come a long way since then, but that is why I came to Minnesota.
And that state cemetery is right outside the gates of Camp Ripley, just north of Little Falls.
Yes, correct.
And I've stopped in there a couple of times since I've met you, and boy, that's a beautiful place.
Yeah, it really is. We have a great staff there, and they take so much pride in what they do and caring for the veterans and their families that we serve, and then the appearance of the cemetery, they really care for it like, you know, some of our staff does have loved ones buried there, but they take a lot of pride, and it shows.
It's perfectly groomed, and it looks great. And you had a little art project up there that we've talked about on this show before. How are those paintings coming?
Yeah, we're coming along. The third of five was unveiled at the cemetery in Little Falls on the 6th of February. It's the Coast Guard painting. Great addition in our committal hall there at the cemetery. It's kind of a six-sided room with one side being a tall bank of windows. And so the five paintings depicting each branch of the military on those walls, the Coast Guard piece actually balanced out the three paintings that are there, leaving the two remaining walls for the U.S. Marine Corps painting and also the U.S. Air Force painting. So it's just a great addition to that space and been very well received by the public.
Well, I was going to probably give you some trouble about that because I was in the Air Force and the Air National Guard, and I keep waiting for that last one, which you don't have it done yet.
Saving the best for last, Tom.
Now, Dave, I know you were running the State Cemetery in Little Falls, but there's a program now to open up three more state cemeteries, and I understand the one down in Preston is done and open and going. You've been building that?
That's correct. We were two full years of construction down in southeastern Minnesota. Preston's a small community about 30 miles south of Rochester, located right on Highway 52. Property was donated by the county. Again, we started construction in the fall of 2013, and we finished up in October this past fall, and on Veterans Day, we buried the first two veterans in that new state veteran cemetery in Preston. We're two former mayors of Preston. We had a lot of discussion on who the first burials are going to be. There was a lot of questioning about who are you going to bury first in that cemetery. And it was a county commissioner that brought this idea forward. He knew that these two gentlemen were aware of the cemetery prior to their passing, and they both had directed their families that that is where they wanted to be buried. And so when we heard the story that they both had that community connection as former civil servants, it became an easy decision, and it was a great day to see those first, you know, don't mean that in any weird way, but these are special places, and to honorably bury veterans and these two first gentlemen there was a monumental milestone for us.
We're speaking with Dave Swantek, the Minnesota State Veterans Cemetery Director on Minnesota Military Radio. So, Dave, you avoided any political problems by burying those two mayors first. Good work, good work. How many burials have you had down there?
To date, we've done about 30 burials down there. So, you know, we know the pace is going to pick up. We have over 100 individuals or families that have pre-registered veterans that are deceased, and it seems like they want to wait until, of course, the weather gets a little nicer, and so in our burial schedule for the end of this month and then going into May, actually have a lot of burials scheduled already for, you know, veterans that have been cremated and their families have been holding them waiting for the cemetery to open.
So Dave, how big is that cemetery, and how many will it hold?
Well, it's a big place. Our overall property is 169 acres, which overall size is about six times bigger than Little Falls. Our initial development of our infrastructure, our support facilities, and then grave sections that will accommodate our first 10 years of burial encompasses about 28 acres, very spread out. It's kind of a challenging site to develop just in the topography and the boundaries of the property. But, you know, the final result is just an amazing facility. And we're looking forward to this summer when the landscape starts turning green. And over time, as that matures, the trees and all the plantings that we did down there, it's just going to get better and better every year.
I think you told me there's rolling hills down there. It's going to be the Arlington of Minnesota.
Yeah, it's. I'll put that up against any national or state veteran cemetery out there. You know, give us 5 years to mature that landscape, and I don't think you find any place any better in the country.
Now, Dave, is there going to be a formal dedication ceremony at Preston?
There is. We decided to wait until this spring. We're going to coincide that event with the Memorial Weekend. So our dedication in Preston is scheduled to be during the afternoon of May 29th. It's a Sunday. We found in Little Falls for the past two decades that our program on Sunday instead of Memorial Day has been a great success, especially in small communities, rural area. We find that the veterans in the area can participate in our program on Sunday, and it doesn't conflict with their programs in their hometowns on Monday. Because of that, we get huge crowds in Little Falls annually, 12 to 1,500 people showing up for our service. And so we're going to continue that Sunday tradition in Preston. Even going forward, we'll have an annual service on Sunday. But this dedication this year on the 29th of May is going to be a special day for us down there.
So Memorial Day Sunday, May 29th, Preston, Minnesota, there'll be a dedication and a Memorial Day service. Are you going to have still have the Little Falls service the same day?
Same day, yeah. We're going to, you know, as we continue to build cemeteries, we'll have those events on the Sunday prior to Memorial Day. As I say, that's worked out very well for us in Little Falls, and we want to continue that.
Dave, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I want to talk about a couple more Minnesota State veterans that you have in the plans. We're speaking with Dave Swantek from the Minnesota State Veterans Cemeteries on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Jim Kellogg, commander of the Minnesota American Legion. This coming June, over 800 high schoolers will travel to Minnesota Boys State and Minnesota Girls State. They are premier programs in Minnesota for hands-on learning about grassroots democracy. The students will create their own parties, elect their own legislature and state officers, and become better citizens of our great nation. Please join the American Legion family still serving America. Contact us at mnlegion.org. That's mnlegion.org.
Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been talking with Dave Swantek, who is the Minnesota State Veterans Cemetery Director, about the state cemeteries at Little Falls and the new one in Preston, Minnesota. And, Dave, before we get started, I got some questions about a couple of new ones. But once again, that Preston Cemetery is open. You've buried about 30 souls down there. And there's going to be a dedication ceremony on Memorial Day weekend, the Sunday, May 29th. And that's open to the public, right?
It is open to the public. Anybody that is looking for something to do that day, we would encourage you and invite you to come down and check out a very special place that honors veterans in southeastern Minnesota.
I wish our listeners could see you smile, because every time you talk about Preston, you're grinning.
Yeah.
Must be a great, beautiful place.
It's incredible.
Now, I understand that the short-term plans are to have four state cemeteries in addition to Little Falls and Preston. What's the next one coming up?
Duluth is next. Actually, Duluth was the first area that kind of triggered this talk about expanding on what we had in Little Falls. And acquisition of property became a little bit of a problem for us up there. Some challenging terrain. It seems like it's either rocky or swampy or something that's not appropriate for a cemetery. We have to consider what's, 10 or 12 feet under the ground as well as what it looks like aesthetically. So Duluth is next. We're moving forward with that project. We're in the design phase as we speak, about 35% complete with the design up there. We've acquired a piece of property that's on Highway 53, about 15 miles out of Duluth as you're heading up towards the Iron Range. Fantastic location on that busy highway. that feeds so well from Grand Rapids, the Iron Range, other area communities, Cloquet, Duluth. So we're excited about that. We hope to start construction on that new cemetery in October.
Now, is that a large piece of land as well?
It is, about 104 acres. It was a school trust property. So we worked with the DNR, who administers school trust properties for the state of Minnesota. We were able to acquire that property for its appraised value, and what we had to do was compensate the school trust for the value of the property, and then the administrative ownership of that was turned over to our department so that we could pursue the construction of a cemetery on that site.
Well, Dave, I think the last time you were here, I asked you about what's the reason for these new cemeteries, and I think it was to have cemeteries closer to where the families are so they could go visit once in a while. Is that still the prime motivating factor?
Exactly, Tom. That is the motivating factor. We find that if families have to travel typically greater than 60 miles, we use 75 miles when we're planning, but any distance greater than that, they're going to tend to choose a local option for burial. And so veterans typically in rural locations that aren't approximate to a large national cemetery like Fort Snelling in the metro area, and most national cemeteries are in metro areas, they find that they don't utilize that benefit.
So what's the anticipated opening date for the Duluth Cemetery?
Well, if we get started with construction, as we hope, in the fall, we're looking at about a little over a year of construction. So I guess that would put us in the spring of 18.
So you're going to spend some quality time up in Duluth.
I hope to.
And where's the fourth location?
Fourth location is in Redwood Falls, southwestern Minnesota. So you can see kind of the strategy of getting into those corners in Minnesota where more rural settings. So we're excited about that project as well, and be a couple years down the road. Redwood County is working to acquire a piece of property for that project and donate to the state of Minnesota. Very generous contribution by the residents of Redwood County, and we're looking forward to expanding our cemetery down into that region of our state as well.
So by the time you get this all done, our veterans and our families of veterans will have some choices whether to use the national cemeteries or the state cemeteries, and whatever's most convenient for the families, because Memorial Day and other times of the year you want to go visit. And so they'll have lots of good choices.
They will have lots of good choices and close to home, which is the idea behind all of this expansion.
Well, Dave, sounds like you're doing a great job. I hope you'll come back and visit us soon and keep us up to date on what's going on.
Anytime. Love to come back, Tom.
All right. Thanks for joining us today.
You bet.
That was Dave Swantek, the Minnesota State Veterans Cemetery Director on Minnesota Military Radio. Joining me now is the Senior Enlisted Advisor to the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham. Sergeant Major, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Hello, Tom. Wonderful to be with you once again.
Sergeant Major, I heard through the grapevine that you were up at Camp Ripley recently for a competition. Did you win the Best Warrior competition again?
Well, no, I didn't win, but I did win in that it was just one heck of a competition. And I'll tell you what, Tom, we have got just some fantastic soldiers in this case, because it was a soldier Best Warrior competition. Obviously, we have great airmen as well, but I mean, this weekend once again proved what great soldiers we have in this organization.
And how many soldiers take part in this competition?
So this is the roll-up. It's the state competition. So I had 13 total participants, and these are the best of the best from across our organization. So from out of the division, out of the 1st Brigade, out of the other brigades that we have in our organization, they sent their winners to our state competition so we could name the Minnesota Army National Guard Best Warrior.
And how many actual winners are there?
So we select one NCO, so that's a sergeant E5 or above, and one soldier, which is an E4 or below, so a private or a specialist. And we narrow it down to two people, one in each category, that will move forward and compete next month at the Region 4 competition, which is our 7-state region, and then the winner from that event will actually move on to the Army National Guard competition later on in June. And so then that person, or hopefully in our case, both of our winners will be competing against the other, or the total 54 states and territories.
So, Sergeant Major, what type of ordeals did they have to endure in order to win?
Well, it's a compressed training schedule, so we start them on Friday night, going through Sunday afternoon, and the big events are an Army physical fitness test, and they took that Saturday morning, and I think that that was probably the most challenging event of the day, simply because it was about 24 degrees out with 30-mile-per-hour whipping winds out there at Camp Ripley, and it was cold. The wind really, really made it challenging. And the good thing is in an event like that, it allows our soldiers to have their mental endurance tested. And that's really what this competition is about. We want to test physical abilities, their endurance, both physically and mentally. And that PT test really did it for them. The other big event, which is not an easy task, was the wrap-up on Sunday, where they competed in a 12-mile ruck march or road march with their normal combat gear on. So their protective vest, their helmet, a weapon, and then a minimum of a 35 pound pack on their back. And they had a ruck 12 miles, Tom, in 3 hours or less. Otherwise they weren't able to pass the competition. So it was two very physical, demanding events in that PT test and that road march. And then, of course, we do other things to test their skills, like land navigation, both during the day, during the night. And you know what? No competition would be complete without making them stand in front of a board to throw a bunch of questions at them to test their knowledge about military history and a whole wide variety or range of topics that are important to being in the Army and in the military.
Sergeant Major, we just got about a minute left. Do you want to share with us who the winners were?
I would love to share with you the winners. So in the soldier category, that's the lower enlisted, our winner was Private First Class Ryan Eiler. He came out of our Bravo Company of the 134th BSB, Brigade Support Battalion. And then our NCO winner was Sergeant First Class Adam Kelly. He came out of our Recruiting and Retention Battalion. And I told you it was a great competition, real close. We do select alternates, Tom. And in the lower enlisted ranks, we had an alternate. He was a specialist, Bowser, Joseph Bowser, out of our 114th Trans Company. And our NCO alternate was Staff Sergeant Dan Sebo out of our RTI up at Camp Ripley. So great, great competition and great competitors, tight competition. And I know that we selected the best soldiers to represent Minnesota moving forward.
Sergeant Major, you'll have to let us know next time we talk how they did on the next level of competition, and we wish them all the best.
Absolutely, and I know that your audience is smart with this. Hashtag MNBWC2016, and they can see all the pictures of our great event from last weekend.
I think they probably can find some if they go to Facebook and check out Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham's page. I think there were some pictures there, too.
There absolutely was, and that's a great place to send them as well.
Sergeant Major, thanks for joining us again today.
Hey, Tom, it's always my pleasure, and I look forward to giving you great reviews about our regional competition the next time we speak.
Thank you, Sergeant Major.
Take care.
That was Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham, the Senior Enlisted Advisor to the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard on Minnesota Military Radio. We have one mention today. Scoops for Troops will be held Sunday, April 24th at the Arden Hills Army Training Site. It's a family-friendly event for civilians, veterans, and military families. A 5K run, a 3K walk is followed by an ice cream, food social, and silent auction. Funds raised benefit Fallen Heroes Children Education Fund through Tribute to the Troops. More information at scoopsfortroops.net. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Colonel John Saftram, Dave Swantek, Command Sergeant Major Doug Wortham, Commissioner Larry Shelleteau of the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next week as we talk about the 13th Psychological Operations Battalion and check on veteran employment and the upcoming career fair. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's
Minnesota
life this
Military
week.
Military Radio is a production of iHeartMedia, the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the Minneapolis VA, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon, and the Minnesota National Guard. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phelan Partners Limited, a merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is a life member of the American Legion, VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, and the DAV. For podcasts and the latest updates, follow us at Minnesota Military Radio.